In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Here's where I ask if you're okay on time, Nick. Are you good?
What if I said no?
I'm waiting. Someday you're going to. That's why I ask.
I always feel like Sean's going to screw the Texans out of a good deal because you're going to miss like the equivalent of the James Harden trade comes across. But the Texans couldn't participate because Sean strong-armed Nick into being on.
No, actually, I was mesmerized because Omar has a TV on here in this room, and I just saw the Alpha Academy was at Packers practice. So I guess they were making the rounds in training.
They were the ones that were at Texans practice last year.
Exactly.
Otis and Chad Gable and them. They were the ones that were a Texans fan. They're cheating on us, Nick.
Seth has no idea who we're talking about.
I thought they were friends.
Now I remember based on that. So I should have done the homework on that.
That's
one.
Okay. That's all right. Nick Caserio joining us on the show. Nick, I'm curious with respect to CJ going into year two. You know, there's all the chatter about, well, you know, going into year two, now the league's had an off season to take a look as if they're not studying film during the season about CJ. But then just the whole dynamic of handling that chess game that defensive coordinators are going to have for him. Is there anything to that, by the way, like the year one to year two, that the league now can go back into some lab and figure him out? And if there is, how equipped is he to deal with that?
Yeah, that's probably more of an off-season discussion. I mean, I think that's kind of a funny topic that everybody resorts to. And then if a player, for some reason, doesn't have a good year, it's because of the sophomore slump. Yeah. Well, I mean, the reality is you either play good football or you don't. I mean, I don't want to oversimplify it, but that's the reality of it. So there's things that you can work on in the offseason. I think our offensive staff, Bobby, Bill Lazor, Gerard. I mean, they've done a great job spending time and just kind of figuring out, all right, what are some of the things that we do well? What are some of the things that CJ does well? How do we put the offense in a position? And then who's the opponent? And each week there's going to be different challenges. The Colts are going to present certain challenges. Once we get to Chicago, they're going to present other challenges. So this league is a week-to-week endeavor, and you have to approach it that way. So are you doing the things that are conducive to winning each week? And specific to the quarterback position, I mean, ultimately it just comes down to good decision-making, run the operation, and playing clean football. And if you put yourself in a position, and we've gone through this, I mean, we go through each week, and we kind of do a turnover presentation. Dino Vasquez so goes through and kind of earmarks some things. But I mean, this goes back to, I mean, I can certainly attest to this. When you don't turn the ball over, you increase your chances by winning, I'd say, pretty exponentially. So I mean, if you don't simply turn the ball over, like if nothing else happens and you don't turn the ball over, I mean, I want to say the win rate was close to 80% last year, something like that, if you do nothing else. So what does that mean? It means being diligent with the ball security, take care of the football, making good decisions, making a smart play. Do you take the profit if the shot downfield's not there? So those are the things. Like, we can kind of talk about a bunch of other fluff, but when it comes right down to it, do you execute the offense? Are you making good decisions? And that ultimately is going to determine whether or not a player or a team has a success You know, we've talked about this. I mean, CJ had a great year. We had a good year as a team last year. Honestly, it doesn't really matter. Like, nobody cares about it. So 23 is in the past. So we're focused on the 24 seasons and the challenges that are in front of us, which are significant, starting here in a few days with the Colts.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things I've heard from CJ is multiple different times he's reminded people that, hey, I'm still a young quarterback and I'm still learning. There's still a lot I have to improve and all of that. And going hand in hand, I think that was, I was really impressed with Bobby Slowick last year and how open he was in talking about how, hey, in that first game of the year versus Baltimore, we probably tried to do a little too much and tried to have the full offense out there with a rookie quarterback and backup offensive linemen and new pieces and everything. So they, you know, he dialed it back a little bit and then started building again. And CJ, I mean, CJ just kept taking these steps in his development that you don't typically see out of young quarterbacks as quickly as he did, and really just, you know, integrating into the entire offense. Were you, was there a moment in the season last year where you thought, okay, this is all right, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but this is going along pretty, like, CJ is developing pretty quickly as a young quarterback?
Yeah, no, I think it's a constant evolution of players, of offense. I mean, Bobby's a great coach. Bobby's very smart. And I think early in the season, all of us, all teams, you're really trying, you think, well, this is what it might look like. We think it's going to look like this. But you don't really know until you actually, nobody's played 65, 70 plays in offensive defense at this point. So what is that going to look like? Our first opportunity is going to be in front of us. You saw glimpses in that first Ravens game where there's some plays, like we hit a couple routes, CJ made a couple throws where it was like, okay, yeah, that looks pretty good. Look, you know, let's see if we can build on that. And it's funny, when you go back and look at those two games, I mean, they were almost like a carbon copy of each other. Competitive in the first half, gave ourselves a chance. In the second half, it kind of got away from us. So, like, those are some of the things. All right, can we learn from that? But then as we kind of grew and evolved a little bit early in the year, and then I'd say week four against the Steelers, you know, that was probably one of our better games as an overall team. And when you look at it, it was like, all right, well, you know, looks like, you know, we got a shot to at least be competitive. You know, offensively did some things, and CJ played well and made some throws. I mean, the bottom line is, look, CJ's a very skilled player. He's a very good thrower of the football. He's a good football player. We're glad he's our quarterback. And we're going to face some challenges. It's not going to be perfect. Like, he's going to have to endure some things. We're going to endure some things. How do we deal with them? Can we just continue to push forward? Can we handle the adversity when it strikes? Because it's going to happen. I mean, that's the way this league is designed. Like, no team, again, very few teams, there's just everybody, everything's going to be perfect. You know, we look at the Chiefs last year, Super Bowl winner. I mean, lost six games or whatever it was. And, you know, everybody thought, like, they're not going to be in the playoffs. You know, the Chiefs, their run is over. And then they play good football at the end and they go ahead and win the Super Bowl. So you never really know. It takes time. You know, everybody wants it to happen overnight. That's just not the reality of it. So do you have the right people? Do you have a good system? We're going to adjust and adapt as we go, because that's what this league forces you to do. And the teams that embrace that and do it, those are the ones that are going to give themselves a shot at the end. So hopefully we can get off on the right foot here this week. But, I mean, CJ's worked really hard. He's spent a lot of time with the offensive staff. Done some decent things here in training camp. So now we're going to put it on display here on Sunday and see if we can build on some of the things that, you know, we've done successfully.
That's when you talk about that dynamic of kind of just, I guess, learning who you are as a football team as the season unfolds. And, you know, I apologize every time I do this, but to take it back to your previous experience with New England, that was one thing that always impressed me about Bill Belichick's teams was I remember one of those years in West Virginia when you guys had the combined practice with the Texans at the time. I remember looking at the Patriots defensive line and thinking, like, these guys, ugh, this is not a Patriots defensive line. And then I checked in on them like 6 weeks later and it looked like a completely different team. So, I mean, at that point, like those guys, like, they had dialed in their technique. They were better defensive linemen 6 weeks later. So it probably feels like you're trying to diagnose what you are as a team at the same time, but then you also got to pay attention to the guys who are actually improving. So it's just from a week to week basis. You spend that first half of the season really consciously trying to figure out, okay, who are we actually as a football team?
No, absolutely. I mean, honestly, that's probably one of Bill's most underrated qualities, is trying to look, take inventory of what you have. All right, let's figure it out, and maybe let's shift a little bit more of this and a little bit less of that. But no, the teams that improve, and from our perspective, from a team perspective, and look, there's there's no experts out there. Nobody has any idea like what a team's going to look like, how good they're going to be. We're focused on a Houston Texans. We can't worry about too many other teams, but we think we have a decent idea of what we have on campus here in the building, and you're always looking for continual improvement. So just because you've made the roster or you're on the practice squad, are you improving on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis? And D'Amico preaches that day after day because that's what it takes, consistent, constant improvement over the course of time. And then you do see players improve. Forget about year one to year two. You might see improvement from week one to week six, which is what you want. So you want the trajectory of your team to be moving forward. If there's a little bit of a dip or if a player is not improving, it's one of two things. He's A, not capable of it, or B, he's not applying himself. So we have to, as a team, figure out, do we have the right people? Do they have the right mindset? Are they doing the right things? Is there a reason that their improvement has been curtailed a little bit? What can we do to fix it? Is there something that we can coach a little bit better? Can we teach a drill? Can we incorporate a drill? You know, that's another kind of underrated thing. You might be struggling with something, and you might be able to develop a drill in practice where you can simulate what that player needs to do or what you need to do as a collective whole. So it's a week-to-week endeavor in this league. I know nobody wants to hear that, but that's the reality of the situation. And can you just continually stack really good days together? And if you can do that over the course of 17, 18 weeks, then hopefully you've put yourself in a position where you have a shot at the end.
Nick Caserio joining us. Nick, is this fun now? Like, more fun for you now? Like, the Texans have – I know there's work to be done, but, like, this is a really fun time in Houston right now between the Texans and the Astros resurging here again and the Rockets. Like, are you able to ever kind of take a step back and go, man, this is kind of a fun time to be in this city right now?
No, I think we're all very fortunate to be in the position that we're in. I think all of us enjoy, I don't want to say enjoy, but, you know, embrace challenges. And, you know, when you build something as a group, and it, again, we've done this as a collective whole, the players and the coaches, D'Amico, his influence, his impact. So our goal is to hopefully put the team in a position where we can go out there and represent the city and the fans in a positive way. But, and we've talked about this on different points of the show, and I know you and I have some exchanges back and forth, mm-hmm. but I mean, the Astros were left for dead. Like, everybody, the world's ending. The Astros are never going to win a baseball game again. Well, here they are. They're six games up in September, put themselves in a position to probably have a decent shot here in the playoffs. So the sky is falling until it's not. And then, you know, Jordan's going doing Jordan things. So when you see, I would say, elite athletes perform at an elite level, I mean, it's fun to see. It's fun to watch. Like, we want the other teams to have success. So, you know, sometimes it elevates the performance of everybody around you. So, I mean, honestly, it's a credit that to Astros and what they've done as organizations. Their consistency, I mean, it's unmatched. Like, you could say what you want to say about the Astros, and people have, but what you can argue with is the level of consistency with which they've performed over the last how many years with different people. And going back to kind of what Seth was talking about, they've had some people improve and they develop over the course of time. And, you know, when you look at what the Rockets did this year, I mean, they put themselves in a position. They were on a doorstep, you know, the playoffs here. They got a really good young team. They got a really good head coach. They got a good program. You know, they drafted Shepard there second or third overall, and looks like he lit up the summer league. So, look, you want to see teams have success in the city. Like, we encourage one another. We pull for one another. Like, I enjoy going to watch Astros play, and just, I'm a fan of sport, and when you see high-level performers, you have an appreciation for it because you understand how much work goes into it, and you have an appreciation for what they're trying to do. So it's awesome for the city. You know, hopefully the fans are excited about the season, understanding that there's going to be some ups and downs, mm-hmm. but you know, we're excited for the season to kick off. We're excited for the opportunity in front of us. And I think our players they have the right mindset and are ready to work. And, you know, it's cool to be involved and just to be affiliated and to have, you know, be a small piece of some of the things that we're doing here. So, yeah, it's cool. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Nick, you know, you said some really nice things about D'Amico. You usually say really nice things about D'Amico when given the opportunity. But I've always really enjoyed both Brian Billick and John Harbaugh when they've described their relationship with Ozzie Newsome and about how they would have productive disagreements or debate. I think Billick called it scrimmaging when they'd go back at, you know, you try, you know, like you're arguing with each other, but it's all, you know, it's not blood sport or anything. Have you and D'Amico had that point yet? Like a big impasse where you guys just saw things or one situation completely differently and you really had to, you had to hash it out over the course of several days or weeks?
I say any good relationship is, the foundation is based on respect. I have a massive amount of respect and appreciation for who D'Amico is. Forget about as a coach, which is massive, but as a person. And like anything, any good organizations, any good functioning entities, it's all about communication. It's not about confrontation. It's not about who's right or who's wrong. Are we making the right decision for the collective whole? And hopefully, you know, he would say the same thing, but we're very respectful of each other's position and opinion, and we talk through it. It's not we're talking at one another. We're talking with one another.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt that you conduct yourselves cordially, but I'm curious, like, have you had that moment where you had to be like, that's right, I got to be respectful here, but I think he's wrong.
I don't think that's happened yet, or if it has, I probably can count it on maybe one hand and maybe one or two fingers. Yeah. But no, we always have very constructive conversations. And I've said this before, like my job is to support him in any way, shape, or form, however I can do it. And just hopefully we can put the organization in a position in the best light possible. So, I mean, all of us, I mean, the city of Houston, you know, I'm sure I'd speak for them. Like, we're glad he's our head coach. Yes. And wouldn't want anybody else leading this football team.
Amen. Amen to that. Nick Caserio joining us. Text message. Sean, low-key trying to get Nick to look closer at Notre Dame players. There's nothing low-key about it. Nick knows that.
We already have three, right?
Yeah.
You have a JP.
I didn't realize Heinisch's younger brother
Heinisch's
was
brother. Seth, I said the same thing. I'm like, 41? I'm like, wait a minute. That's Heinisch's brother. So
he looks exactly like him. It's incredible.
You know what?
He's a little better looking than Kurt. So.
I meant body type.
Back in the day, there were
they both have the same tattoo, I think, on their right calf. So maybe that was like a brothers thing.
There you
decided
go.
To do it together. No,
Notre Dame did have some players back in like the 1930s that got busted for going and playing professional games. Also, they were double dipping, and are you convinced that wasn't Kurt Heinisch?
They do pay at the college level now.
Kurt was there, but no, he didn't sneak into his Notre Dame uniform.
That's funny. All right, Nick, we'll cut you loose, man. We've kept you plenty here. We always appreciate the time. We are really looking forward to the season. Super excited about week one, and looking forward to catching up again down the road. Thanks for the time, Nick.
Appreciate you, fellas. Take care.
All right, thanks. That's Texans GM Nick
Caserio.
Reading
between the lines, it sounds like him and D'Amico are at each other's throats.
Stop.
sounds like it's a bloodbath.
Nick literally said at his press conference last week, I love the guy.
I was hoping maybe I just want a specific disagreement. We won't get that out of it until you know, maybe both guys are retired and they all have to do an interview together and tell a story about the time that they really had a hard time coming to an agreement.
Hopefully that's the environment. Hopefully it's not a tell-all book by somebody.
I don't doubt that I think they have a really good working relationship.
I do too.
But everybody, like he said, you're going to see things differently, which is why you have a GM and a head coach,
right?
Because otherwise, you've just got either a coach or a GM that's running roughshod with nobody checking his blind spots.
Do you guys had a fun back and forth on Damian Pierce? Where are you on that now? After
I think that the organization, for all the reasons like we as fans really love Damian Pierce the person and his upside and everything else, I think they feel the same way. I just. There's some things that you just don't know until you see it in live action.
Yeah.
So I still feel that same way about Damian. I think it's just you got to see it. Got to see it in an actual regular season football
the,
game.
The depth chart is going to come out at some point this week. We're also going to learn about captains pretty soon. You know I'm into that. I should have asked Nick who the captain's going to be. But the depth chart is going to come out. The depth chart is interesting because I think if Damian is the backup to Mixon and Cam Akers is third, that will be a thing with people. And it probably shouldn't be because I think it's going to be more situational than that. That said, if Cam Akers is second and Damian is third, then there may be something there.
It almost don't teams sometimes list guys as like co-backups?
They I don't know if they do co-backups. Like they do. I've seen them do co-starters before. I don't recall. I'm not saying they haven't. I just don't recall them doing co-backups before.
What if they do like third down backup?
They create a whole separate line for third down specialists.
First down backup is Damian Pierce.
They added nickelback to the depth chart a few years ago. You know,
yeah, a lot of teams have started to do that. They list the nickel back as their starting is their nickel defense is their starting defense, which is. I mean, like starting even like calling something the starting offense or defense isn't really accurate anymore because it all depends on which package you're going to roll out on the field.
That's right.
The Texans do play nickel more than they play their base defense. So Jalen Petrie, for all intents and purposes, is like a starting linebacker.
We will continue to hash through some of the things we talked about with Nick Caserio throughout the show. I'm sure you'll hear some of that interview throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610. Some good stuff on the Colts, including. Shane Steichen, a lot of respect for Shane Steichen. Let's hear from D'Amico Ryans in the next segment. His history of Shane Steichen goes beyond just Colts Texans. They clashed a few times back in the NFC as well. What does D'Amico think of his history with Shane Steichen? That is coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you, getting good feedback on the Nick Caserio interview. If you missed it, it'll be up on the podcast. It'll be on Rewind. I'm sure the fellas will be playing some audio from it. Text message, Nick, you are not a small piece of what's going on in Houston. You and D'Amico are the biggest pieces of the sports culture in Houston right now. They are certainly two instrumental figures in turning around our football team. No question.
Look, and again, I really try to be careful in how often I bring up the Patriots. Because, for one, Texans fans don't really want to hear a whole lot about it. But obviously, Caserio spent 20 years there. Those were his formative years in becoming who he is now. If you think about Boston and what they've had this century in terms of multiple championships by their major professional sports, it's pretty unique in sports. So when you get a little taste of, man, all three of our teams might be competitive at the same time, and it's just to actually stack up championships, that's a whole different level of it.
Sure.
But there was almost kind of something going on in Boston where it felt like those teams had fed off of each other in a lot of ways. They were just doing things differently than a lot of the other teams in sports were doing. And with Houston, if you're going to tie some things together, I think the Texans have become a more modern, analytically based organization. Not to an extreme degree where it's annoying or anything, but the Rockets and the Astros were at the vanguard of advanced sports analytics and everything else, and that was a lot of the reason for a lot of their success. I think the Texans are a much more modern NFL team now, in the good ways,
yeah.
Not with an over-reliance on it or anything like that. Like they, I think it's kind of like with the Astros, where you got to blend the old-school baseball mentality, but also with the tools of the new age stuff, and the Texans are much more like that.
I think, and you're talking about the football part of it, I think organizationally they're that way. I think the way they let players handle their business off the field, I think the way the team markets itself now is a much more much more modern, current kind of way.
Yeah.
I think just as a whole, the organization has kind of leapt into 2024 now. But the football stuff, there's no question about it. The way they do things over there, it's a great point. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday here. Here's D'Amico Ryans. We talked a little bit about Shane Steichen with Nick Caserio in the last hour or so here. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday asked about his history with Colts head coach and former Eagles offensive coordinator. That's pertinent to this question, his history with Shane Steichen.
Man, I don't look at it as a history, right? Between me and Steichen, like, it's about the players playing the game, right? Our players, Shane is a really good coach. He always has his guys prepared, ready to go. Really respect him as a coach. And for me, it's, we got to do the same. Like, just have our guys prepared, ready to go, ready for anything that they may throw at us. So it's not about me or Shane. It's about the players who strap it up on the field.
Ah, I don't know. I like a poster that has D'Amico on one side and Shane Steichen on the other that says unfinished beef at the bottom of it.
In 2000, I'm going to flip-flop the years here, so I won't even bother trying. Steichen got the better of the 49ers in the NFC Championship game when D'Amico was the defensive coordinator.
22.
There were some extra variables there. For one, at various times the 49ers were playing with their fourth string quarterback because their third string quarterback couldn't feel his throwing hand.
Yes.
They went back to the quarterback who couldn't feel his throwing hand in Brock Purdy. He was giving the ball the stranger the entire second half of that game. Bosa injured his ankle early on. It wasn't the same. But the previous year, D'Amico got the better of Shane Steichen in the regular season, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So, they're 2-2 against each other as either a coordinator or a head coach.
Yeah.
And I think they've both landed some punches. I think that it is very much a chess match between offensive coordinator, head coach Shane Steichen, and defensive coordinator, head coach D'Amico Ryans.
If you were judging last year's two games, I know the record was 1-1, which is really all that matters, but as long as we're narrowing this conversation down to D'Amico on one side and Shane Steichen on the other, if you were judging those two games like a prize fight, you know, you were using your eyes and subjectively saying this guy did a better job than that guy, I think Shane Steichen probably won that last year. I mean, they were dominant in the first game against the Texans, and the other one was nip and tuck, that if Gardner Minshew could just complete some easy passes, hell, if that Goodson kid out of the backfield could catch a ball on fourth down, then we're likely talking about 2-0 the Colts against the Texans.
Sean, you know how I'll tell you sometimes when I'm watching football, I get the old feeling I used to get as a player of a certain anxiety when there's an offense that puts you in a bind. With defensive ends, it's always versus the option game, especially the option game. The old ways, and a lot of us grew up playing against the veer option, it puts the defensive end in a bind if you're going to try to play it the right way, and it's stressful. You might have a coach that says, just hit the quarterback every time. Like, all right, great. If you're going to try to play it the right way where you have to read it, it's stressful as hell. That now with the RPOs, that's how I feel about the linebackers. And Steichen is brilliant with it. He was really good at it with Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew executed it really well. It puts the linebackers and the nickelback, when he's like Jalen Petrie, basically, it puts them in unwinnable situations. It puts you in such a bind where your read has to be absolutely perfect, or Jonathan Taylor's going to rush for 188 yards. The Titans, when Al Shire was a linebacker, the first game they had last year, Zach Moss ran for over 150 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making a devil's compromise all the time. Are going to be weak versus the pass, or are we going to be weak versus the run? Last year in that Week 18 game, it felt like, just watching it again the other day, that the linebackers – the way they were being coached in that game was almost like, you're going to have to concede the run a little bit. We got to, you got to, because the Texans linebackers last year were very eager to stop the run. It was one of the reasons that the Texans got just gored by the play action at times.
Yeah.
So in that game, it looked to me like they were really instructed to be like, you just be sure about it. Don't bite on play action. And ultimately, it was the right strategy, but it's a tough one because it involves conceding a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the old, you know, the Hall of Fame game plan that Belichick had when he was with the Giants versus the Bills in the Super Bowl,
yeah.
where they just basically said, you know what? Let Thurman Thomas eat.
Yeah.
And Thurman Thomas might rush for 100 and however many yards he did, but we got to limit the passing game. That's the bind that D'Amico and those linebackers are in right now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I mean, that's like you said, Jonathan Taylor ran for like 200 yards in that second game against them in week 18. They stopped him when they needed to, though. They did stop him when they needed to. They slowed him down in the fourth quarter. From what you're saying, it sounds like if we're looking for pressure points on the Texans defense, Jalen Petrie under a tremendous amount of pressure this weekend. Probably yeah. Henry Toa, right? I mean, that's going to be a kill spot for Shane Steichen, right?
Yeah, the linebackers, and for these purposes, I consider Jalen Petrie a linebacker and nickel. That's the really hard. And now this is where the film study, the previous experience playing against them, all of those things are that you've just. If you watch enough reps of it, you can start to get a feel for hopefully some tells or just indicators about just how whether it's run or pass.
Yeah.
Just the run pass indicators. Elshire is really good at that stuff. The other thing the Colts do really well, they toe the line on illegal offensive linemen downfield in their RPO game. And like there was one play in the preseason where they got away with it. The left guard was about 3.5 yards downfield on a pass, and they didn't get flagged for it. If I'm D'Amico, that's part of this game too, is being sure that the refs are calling that clean.
Yes.
That you're pointing out when I don't want to be overly technical here for those of you just the reason that offensive linemen downfield is illegal is because they've got an unfair advantage when a linebacker is trying to figure out if it's run or pass.
Mm-hmm.
And if it looks like this guy is, if it looks like the offensive line is blocking like it's definitely a run, and that's your read, you bite on the play action. So when those guys get away with being 3 yards downfield instead of two, it's you gotta be on the officials to call that tight.
Yeah.
And the Colts are really, really good at just toeing the line on it.
Yep. Nick Caserio joined us over the last hour or so here. I thought his answer about Kamari Lassiter was interesting. Like at the beginning of camp, they had C.J. Henderson and Jeff Okuda on the outside, and they had Kamari Lassiter on the inside, which is where all the experts were saying, you know, he only runs a 4.6, and so he can probably, he's going to be at his ceiling. He's probably got to be a slot corner, you know, so we'll see how this goes. And then all of a sudden he starts getting reps on the outside in practice. Like, oh, okay, this guy's just as good, if not better, than these other guys that we have.
Right, right, yeah.
that was like found money early on in the spring activities. Almost.
Yeah, and I think the consistency and the intelligence is everything that they were hoping for when it came to, okay, this guy comes out of the University of Georgia. Kirby Smart does a really good job of coaching these guys and prepping them. And are they going to be prepared to play in the NFL earlier? Same way, you know, they feel about defensive players from a Nick Saban team for mm-hmm. years and years, but you got to see them actually do it. I think that's usually the thing that keeps a rookie from playing earlier is because a defensive coordinator feels like, well, this guy's going to get me fired. Okay, great. He's going to have 10 interceptions, but he's also going to have 10 blown coverages yeah. that lead to touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he might be hell on a highlight reel, but he's going to get me fired.
That's funny.
So,
yeah. Yeah, and if he gets 10 interceptions, he ain't going anywhere because everybody looks at the 10 interceptions. You know what I mean? He'll give up 10 interceptions and 15 touchdowns, but he'll make the Pro Bowl because of the interception, so there's no incentive.
It's a young Trayvon Diggs yes. Dynamic, you know, yes. where, man, the guy gambles a lot. So that's what you're monitoring is, all right, can I trust this guy?
Right.
Sure, we know he can make plays, but can I trust him? And I think that they just felt very early in the process that Kamari Lassiter could be trusted. So well, it didn't seem like it even was much of a decision.
No, I mean, that's why I asked the question, because he's been the number one cornerback from like the second week of OTAs. Like it hasn't wavered at all. It's got to help too when you just get better players on the team overall. It's got to help you just get so much of a better gauge of what you actually have. I know that they talk about, you know, Nick and D'Amico talk about Lassiter. Well, he's in Georgia, so he's going against the best there is to offer. Yeah, in college, but he's going against Diggs and Nico and Tank Dell in practice every day and holding his own, by the way. And that's where you can really go, okay, this is what he's going to see on Sundays over here.
And which, by the way, also, he's got a lot of experience going against A.D. Mitchell, the rookie receiver for the Colts, because he was at Georgia. Nick, when they drafted Stingley, they mentioned, I can't remember if it was Nick who mentioned it or whomever else, but, you know, watching the practice film of Derek Stingley versus Jamar Chase and those guys was actually a factor in their scouting process there. I think they just felt like they had more good intel and info on Derek Stingley versus marquee dudes than they did on Sauce Gardner, so they probably just felt more comfortable with it.
Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson were the wide receivers on that team.
They're
going to be the two highest paid guys.
He had a lot of reps versus some really good wide receivers in college. That's probably one of the non-marquee matchup. Kamari Lassiter was very under-discussed in the national media amongst rookies who are having good years, partly because, look, he only played one preseason game, and Daniel Jones or Brian Daboll or whomever else, they didn't test Kamari Lassiter in that game. So I think that we here locally in Houston probably have seen and talked a lot more about Kamari Lassiter than anybody else. When I'm reading previews of this Colts game, I don't expect to see a whole lot of discussion about Kamari Lassiter in there, but he really is a huge... He's going to get tested. You know, Shane Steichen's no dummy, and I think he obviously knows exactly what Derek Stingley is capable of, but he doesn't know about Kamari Lassiter and what he's going to look like as a pro, so he's going to get tested.
We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on Kamari Lassiter in the next segment. What's the one thing the Texans have to do better if they're going to beat the Colts in week one on Sunday? D'Amico talked about that as well. That's coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
You know, the key is consistency, and it's always important. The first game is going to be about tackling. Right? You have to tackle as a team. Right? So talk about our defense last year. Right? It's too many missed tackles. So for us to improve in run game and also the passing game, we have to be a better tackling team, and that takes just more hats to the ball, more guys securing and wrapping up.
Now, that was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Now, something that you've pointed out, Seth, and I hope I don't butcher this, but part of the swarm mentality, it feels like, baked into swarming is the fact that there are going to be some missed tackles when you swarm. The hope is that the quantity of bodies that are being thrown at the ball maybe makes up for the lack of quality in the first couple guys that might get to the ball the first time. Like, it's just... The swarming is there are missed tackles that come with swarming, but you get a lot of bodies to the ball.
Well, and I think that there might be some truth to that, except that, and maybe last year it was more that case. But when you go and you look at the entirety of the season, there was just some flat out poor tackling, fundamentally bad tackling last year, and that you realize, the swarm is great, but it's got to be the classic. All right, the first guy on the spot, for sure, maybe try to lay a big hit, but do it in such a way that you're not also neglecting tackling. I think one of the things that still irks me to this day is when I see people say, well, Ronnie Lott couldn't play in today's NFL. If you go back, and I honestly felt that same way too. I went back and I watched a compilation of Ronnie Lott's 100 greatest hits in the NFL, and I swear, there are only a handful of them that would have been illegal by today's standards. Ronnie Lott was first and foremost a very fundamentally sound tackler who also happened to make a big impact as he was coming in for a fundamental tackle. So they're not mutually exclusive. It's not like you can only go for the big hit at the expense of proper tackling. Ronnie Lott did a really good job of it. And he did that in an era, by the way, where the 49ers did not practice in pads ever. They didn't. Yeah. They practiced the way basically that you're legislated to have to play now. And he did it with fundamentally sound technique. So the notion that somehow, well, in this day and age, you can't teach good tackling, it's just, it's complete bogus BS. Because all the drills that you do, like rugby players are pretty good tacklers, and they do it with no pads. You know, there's ways to practice it without going to the ground. And I think that hopefully that's one of the improvements this year on the Texans.
Are you confident they'll be a better tackling team this year?
I am, based on just what I saw of Jalen Petrie,
yeah.
Which is that you can see, even though it's a preseason game, the fundamentals show up. It's one of the things I like watching for in the preseason. Mm-hmm. It's all right, yeah, you might be playing against backups, it's not for real, et cetera, et cetera. The fundamentals show up, and Jalen Petrie fundamentally is a better tackler now than he was in the previous 2 years.
Here's D'Amico Ryans. We just got done talking about Kamari last
year. Which, by the way, he accounts for about half the missed tackles on the team over the last 2 years. So there'll be a better tackling team if Jalen Petrie's a better tackler.
Jalen Petrie, though, improved by 50%. Yeah.
I'm exaggerating on the percentage, but he had the lion's share of a lot of them.
No doubt. We talked about Kamari Lassiter, rookie cornerback. He's going to be under a lot of pressure, especially early in the season, as opposing offensive coordinators will be testing him. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Kamari Lassiter.
What stood out the most to me about Kamari is his consistency. Like, he shows up every day, whether it was rookie minicamp, OTAs, like Kamari, no matter who lined up across from him, like, I just love that he never wavered with whoever lined up across from him, and he accepted whatever challenge was thrown his way. A very smart player. He finishes the right way, right? And that's what it's all about in this league. Everybody's about the same talent-wise, but you have to make up in your mind how you're going to finish each play. And he finishes with the right mindset, which has allowed him, right, to continue to grow as a rookie and be consistent because of his mindset of how he finishes things.
I think that's where, too, when people get hung up on the 4-6 40 time or any of that, the lesson in football always is that the measurables are way more overrated than they should be, just because if you look at, usually it's very rare that the fastest guy in the NFL is the best wide receiver. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that the guy with the best bench press at the combine is the best offensive lineman. It happens, but usually more so than not, those are guys that are kind of physical freaks but don't do the fundamentals well, or just don't have the knack for playing football. And I think with Kamari, what you've seen is, man, talk about being fundamentally sound and understanding the finer aspects of it, understanding, recognizing routes and playing them with the right leverage, all that kind of stuff that's a lot more about the polish of playing the actual position. He's got the equivalent of a 4-3 40 when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
And that all matters. Yeah. The guy, I always think of Wayne Gretzky and the way that people talk about when Wayne Gretzky came into the league, or even when he was a juniors player. People would look at him and just, they'd be like, how is this guy so good? Like, he's tiny, he's not that fast, like, mm-hmm. There's nothing about him that looks like, oh yeah, he's going to be the greatest, but he just saw the game differently than other people, and, you know, his skill level with his stick and everything was just so far above and beyond everybody else that it had very little to do with the measurables. And I think Kamari is one of those guys that it's, you got to kind of throw the measurables out the window because he does so many other things well.
I didn't see a Wayne Gretzky, Kamari Lassiter analogy coming today. I like that. That was good.
I meditated for 90 minutes this morning.
That was good. I had a Yordan analogy that I was going to bounce off Nick, but we kind of ran out of time. But I did send it to him. My relevant cross sport Yordan Alvarez analogy. Andre Johnson. Well,
did he give you an opinion on your Yordan analogy?
He did.
What was your opinion, and what was
my analogy for Yordan across sport was Andre Johnson. Like Yordan Alvarez is like Andre Johnson in that they're both like 10 out of 10 on the freak level. Like, they do freaky things. Like, the highlight reel for Yordan and Andre is 5 stars. But they are both super, super technical with their jobs. Like, Yordan Alvarez isn't just some masher. Like, he is a highly technical, like, great eye, really good plate discipline. Like, the science of hitting is a thing with Yordan Alvarez. Yeah. Similar to Andre Johnson, I think the science of being a receiver. Like, if a route calls for 9 yards, Andre Johnson is running 9 yards. Like, there's, you know, there's the polish.
Running, Yeah, and his ability, honestly, some of Andre's was, yeah, he knew so well how to offset the fact that people were scared of his speed. And for a bigger guy, this is where I've seen Andre's influence on Nico Collins a little bit, I think, in that Nico's a big guy, but who can sit down and change direction underneath and get in and out of his brakes way better than most big guys can. I mean, the physics and the geometry works against you when you're a bigger guy like that. You're a shorter guy close to the ground, you know, you can be a little Zuzu pet out there. That's a good one. Yeah, Jordan, when you first look at him, you think, oh, of course, he's just this huge power hitter who can crank the ball 458 feet.
Right.
But there's a lot more that goes into it than that.
And I think Andre's a lot like that. Like, you watch Andre's highlight film, you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's great because he can jump up over everybody. Guys bounce off of him. But then you listen to people, and we've been deluged with Andre stuff over the last month because of the Hall of Fame, but you hear people like Gary Kubiak, his teammates talk about him, and they talk about just, like, how technically sound he is too, to go with that.
Jordan, the freakish thing about Jordan is his consistency. You know, other than like a little every now and then you get a 2-month stretch at home where he doesn't hit a home run, but even like he very, very rarely has stretches where he's hitting poorly.
Right.
Like his slump this year, he still had an 800 OPS. That was his slump.
That's the freakiest thing about Jordan is it can feel like Jordan is going through a massive slump.
Yeah.
And you go, God, when is Jordan's OPS going to get up around 850 again? And you look, and it's 872 or something.
Yeah, like he's been that way his entire slump.
Right,
yeah,
right. It's just, he's just not superhero Jordan. It just turns out he's like an average major leaguer, an above average. Text message, Steve Largent was the same way, slow but was always open. Yeah, kids, Steve Largent was this guy. Played for Seattle. Now he's like a senator or something like that in the state of
Somebody
Oklahoma.
Somebody should ask Kamari Lassiter that in his next press availability. Do you consider yourself the modern Steve Largent?
Oh, no, dude.
Are you like the Steve Largent of the defensive back world?
And then you would be standing in the scrum after that person asked it, and Kamari's super confused, and you'd be like, "Hang on, Kamari, let me clarify this. Are you Wayne Gretzky, Kamari?"
And actually, this is a political question. I want to know where you stand on Steve Largent's political.
Right.
What is Steve Largent? What's his deal? Is he a Republican, a Democrat? I have zero clue about his.
I don't know. Political. I don't know, and I don't care to guess on the radio.
No, I want to talk about it.
<We'll>
I want to hash this thing out.
We'll ask Ross Tucker in the next segment. We got Ross Tucker joining us. Normally, 7 a.m. on Tuesdays, but we had Nick Caserio on today, so we moved some things around. And so Ross Tucker is going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on the week one of the NFL season. Is he on the Texans bandwagon coming up to the season here? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more with our good friend Ross Tucker. That is coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.